This is WNYC and WNYC.org. You often get the sense that the political candidate at the end of a long campaign is quite different from the one who began the campaign. It's a process that has interested movie makers over the years, and on this month's Political Projections, our year-long election-related film series, we are looking at how Hollywood has depicted candidates, both the good and the bad, as they deal with the long grind of the campaign trail. Joining me now to discuss three movies, The Best Man, The Candidate, and Bob Roberts, are Connie Schultz, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist at the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Welcome back, Connie.
Thank you, Leonard. It's great to be back.
Also, Bill Hilsman, a top political consultant who has run some prominent upset and challenger races for Democrats, progressive independents, and third-party candidates. Very pleased to welcome you to the show. And Bill, was Paul Wellstone's campaign for the U.S. Senate in 1990 the real beginning for you?
Yeah, it really was. We'd done commercial marketing for a number of years, and like a lot of people in America, I always wondered why political advertising was so bad. And we basically tried to take what's successful in commercial marketing and apply it to Paul's campaign, and it worked.
Well, you got him elected on a budget of just $1 million, which was extraordinary even in 1990. I've always wondered why, with that in mind, why we still see so many terrible political ads.
Well, it's basically because it's done by the consulting class in Washington, and they see anybody with talent as a threat.
Well, when you decide to work with a candidate, what are the things that you look for?
We look for, I've said for years, it's really if we had a vote in that election, would we vote for this candidate? So we're trying to work for good candidates. We're trying to work for, as we call them, challenger candidates who probably aren't going to get the support of big money or the political parties. For instance, we worked for Ned Lamont in Connecticut in 2006. In the Democratic primary against Joe Lieberman, when basically no Democratic political consultants would take that race because Joe was a titular Democrat and they didn't want to offend him.
Did you run his campaign when he was the official Democratic candidate?
Yes, we did.
You didn't do as well that time.
Well, it was difficult. Joe was able to campaign as all things to all people. I've told many people that it's the first time in my life that I've seen somebody simultaneously campaign as a Democrat, the de facto Republican candidate, and called himself an independent.
Yeah. Connie, other than your husband, what do you think makes for a good candidate?
Well, I was listening to what Bill was saying, and the whole consultant issue looms so large, and you see it in some of the goofy campaign ads coming out even right now in the presidential race, and I think he's exactly right that I wouldn't say just talent. I would say fresh thinkers are often threatening, and it really does make a difference. And I was just talking to my husband a couple nights ago about his campaign because one of the consultants we had, the reason we hired him, and this is when I had taken a leave of absence from my job while he was running, was because he looked at us and he said, I've waited for so many. His name is Tom O'Donnell, and he said, I've waited for years for a candidate I could actually believe in and promote. And he said, this is what I want to do. And you'll remember, I think I've said before on the show, no one thought Sherrod could win when he first got in the race in 2006.
But I've spoken to Al Gore and John Kerry and asked them what went wrong. And in both cases, they, to some degree, blamed their reliance on political consultants for the mistakes that they made in their presidential campaigns.
Oh, I think that's right.
Now, but they are both experienced politicians. They had won many races before. What happens?
You know, I think, and I'm sure Bill could speak to this as well, it's really important to surround yourself with people who are definitely going to challenge you, but you have to be able to push back when you see that you're getting off track. And a candidate has to surround him or herself with people who are going to let them know when that's happening and not just become part of the groupthink. I think that is especially a challenge in statewide races and national races because you can just see this thing mushrooming, and all of a sudden everyone has lost any sense of clarity about what your original mission was.
Bill, do you think that the skills to be a good candidate are different from the skills to be a good elected official?
I actually do. I'm not an expert on that because I haven't worked that much for somebody after they've gotten elected. But I do know from working on incumbent campaigns that there's a there's a big difference in opinion between the campaign staff that has one view of that candidate and the people who are out there trying to get that candidate elected or reelected.
Let's take a look at the movies. The first one was The Best Man, which was made in 1964, based on a Broadway play written by Gore Vidal. Bill, can you give us a plot summary?
I'm not sure if I can give it real tightly, but it's basically Henry Fonda plays sort of the Adlai Stevenson candidate, the intelligent, good man, and Cliff Robertson plays the candidate who's willing to do practically anything to get elected. And the story takes place at the Democratic Convention, which is a wide-open convention, and they're both fighting for the job. And it turns on the notion that the incumbent president, his endorsement is going to decide this election. And he's got problems with both of these people, with the best man, Henry Fonda, because he's not decisive enough, and with Cliff Robertson, because he'll basically do anything to get elected.
And he sees the world in less nuanced terms. But do you think that the film has problems because it's so stacked? People in the audience know just who the filmmakers and everybody else involved think would make the better president.
Well, I thought it was interesting because in many ways it's the way you see presidential campaigns as a voter, only in microcosm, because this is about a convention, but it's really about one man against the other man and the real differences in their character and what they would bring to the job. So I thought it was interesting in that respect.
It does illustrate at least one crucial difference between that time when it was made and now. I can't imagine a convention where you don't know who the nominee is going to be.
But William Russell is based on Adlai Stevenson to some degree. He's a Secretary of State in the film, and he's called an egghead. He's a bit of a smart aleck. Today he probably would be called a liberal elitist, wouldn't he?
If you were attacking him, for sure.
Do you think, Connie, that someone like that will succeed today?
Well, it depends on whether or not, are we conceding that there may be a liberal elitist in the race? Is that what you're suggesting?
No, I'm wondering whether the campaign trail favors candidates with a black and white worldview like Cantwell.
I wish I could answer that definitively. I'm not sure anymore. That would suggest they're really paying attention. And I think you look at these polls and you see how much people's opinions are fluctuating, especially right now. I'm not sure what convinces them. I think that the consultants aren't sure what convinces them. That's why we see a general sense of mayhem right now in a lot of the commercials.
Well, the issue of toughness is key in this story, and that theme of toughness is still playing out in this current race, isn't it?
It is, but it depends on how you define toughness and where do you want the toughness. I mean, when you look at right now, it seems like the economy is looming so large, and I'm not sure that the argument for national security and who's better equipped to fight the terrorists, I'm not sure that's going to be the winning argument or the deciding factor this time around. I don't know about you, Bill, but that certainly is my sense right now.
I think what's happened is that the electorate has changed and that the consultants and the candidates and the entire political industry hasn't really caught up to that fact. Whereas the last couple of elections were really about, if I'm a Republican, I believe there's actually more of us than there are Democrats out there. All I need to do is turn out the vote. Democrats have believed that for 30, 40 years, and they are out of touch with reality. What's really happening right now is that the people who are deciding these elections are independent voters, and they don't really pay a lot of attention to this partisan stuff.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bill.
That's basically the point I was trying to make. It's a really different breed of voter, and these very, very partisan types of messages, this old version of I'm going to find some voters and turn them out, it's not going to work in this election.
I also think that with this current presidential race and being in the heartland, being in Ohio, I think it's unavoidable that we've got to be really coming at the race issue, because I can't write about Barack Obama or Michelle Obama in any way without getting just bombarded by some of the worst voicemail, especially anonymous voicemail, I've gotten since I wrote about retiring the Confederate flag in 2002.
We have a clip from the film The Best Man where Russell, the candidate we're talking about, William Russell, played by Henry Fonda, is arguing with President Art Hochstadter, played by Lee Tracy, on whether to use the dirt he has on Cantwell.
Don't you understand? If I start to fight like Cantwell, I lose all meaning.
If you don't start to fight, you are finished. Now, I am here to tell you this. That power is not a toy that we give to good children. It's a weapon. And the strong man takes it and he uses it. And if you don't go down there and beat Joe Cantwell to the floor with this very dirty stick, then you've got no business in this big league. Because if you don't fight, this job is not for you. And it never will be.
And so, one by one, these compromises, these small corruptions, destroy character.
To want power is corruption already. Dear God, you hate yourself for being human.
No, I only want to be human, and it is not easy.
And so here we are, faced with the whole matter of whether to run negative attack ads. I doubt that too many candidates would do as much soul searching today.
I hope you're wrong about that. I actually think there is more conversation than we might like to think sometimes about that. But what I do wonder is how much resistance any particular candidate is capable of.
Well, Russell comes across as kind of naive, for maybe too naive for politics, because he doesn't want to make these small compromises, as he puts it. The alternative is to lose the election and maintain your dignity.
And that's ultimately what takes place. I hope we're not giving away the ending for anyone.
Oh, it's okay. Everybody figures it out.
But it's it is ultimately what takes place. And there's an interesting approximation of the Obama campaign in this particular movie. I think that decision is going to be placed in front of the Obama campaign at some point.
Yeah.
What we've always tried to do is to run a high ground campaign and get out in front of what the attacks are going to be. Almost everybody knows what the attacks are going to be these days because so much opposition research is done on your own candidate. So what we've tried to do in past races is to inoculate candidates against those types of attacks that we know are coming and almost push them into the realm of ridicule.
We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll look at the other two films that we are discussing on today's Political Projections, The Candidate with Robert Redford and Bob Roberts with a man named Roberts. My guests are Bill Hilsman, who's a media consultant, founder of Northwoods Advertising, and Connie Schultz, a columnist, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist at the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Stay with us. And we're back with today's Political Projections, talking about whether most candidates are the wrong ones for the job. We're speaking with Connie Schultz of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and Bill Hilsman, who's a media consultant and the founder of Northwoods Advertising, which runs a lot of ads for candidates. And the next film is The Candidate. Connie, could you give us a brief plot summary?
Sure. I love this movie. It came out, I believe, in 1972. Robert Redford is the lead. He's the equivalent of a legal aid lawyer, the son of a governor, kind of a former governor of California, kind of estranged from his dad.
But he has name recognition, and that's
absolutely
important.
Absolutely. And what a face. He's, you know, he's an ideal candidate in many ways, and he is approached by a campaign consultant guy, you know, wants to manage his campaign, wants him to run for the Senate. And at first, the idea is that he will lose. He writes in the matchbook, "You lose. That's the deal." So, you know, you have nothing to lose. You can go out there and put your ideas out there because he's such a liberal and he's a progressive. And so he decides to run, and he gets caught up in it increasingly as they go. And all of a sudden, it becomes clear that he possibly can win this race. And then the challenge becomes exactly what we were just talking about: how much are you willing to change about yourself? How many concessions are you willing to make so that you can win? And it's got one of the best last scenes of any movie I can think of, but I don't know if we should give that away.
But Bill, do you think that the movie accurately represents the process whereby a candidate starts off idealistic and eventually has those ideals eroded by the demands of an arduous campaign?
Yeah, I really do, and because it's a novice candidate, the movie does a good job of showing just how much control consultants wrest from the candidate during the process of a campaign like that. They're a little bit caricatured, but for its time, it was really a revelatory movie.
What happened when people approached your husband, Connie, about running? Did he go through the same kinds of emotional turmoil?
Well, it really, and I wrote about this in my book about the race, because Jared really got criticized a lot publicly for waiting what people thought was for too long a time before he got into the race, and I was the whole reason he didn't, because I was really scared about him running for the Senate. We had only been married a year and a half, and he was in a safe seat in the House, which he'd have to give up. And the pressure was enormous, and not just from consultants, not just from political activists, from family, because you know his is a political family. So I could really identify with more than I cared to admit to, as I was watching this all these years later. I remember watching this when I was in high school. I mean, I'm 51 now, and I remember thinking at the time, "Wow, this is really something, how they can recruit." And then being married to someone and thinking exactly the same thing, "Wow, the amount of effort that goes into this, and how this is for the country, and you have to do this for the country." And then as soon as you agree, you got all these people coming who want to change who you are so that you can actually win, and it doesn't sound like it's for the country at all. And that's when the candidate, as I said earlier, first of all, has to be strong on who he or she is and must have people around him or her who share the mission and are willing to risk unpopularity with the campaign to remind the candidate why he or she got into it in the first place.
We have a clip where McKay, the Robert Redford character, is giving a speech at a banquet after just announcing he'll run in the Democratic primary.
The fact is, in the next few elections, we're going to decide just what it's going to be like to live in this country.
Okay, cut. We got all we need.
Whether people will have more power to shape their own lives. Or whether we're going to lose that power. I know that anyone can stand up and say that much. It's the details that's hard, just how you get people involved. Our lives are more and more determined by forces that overwhelm the individual. I don't know, maybe these questions can't be raised in a political campaign. Maybe people aren't ready to listen. But I'm going to try, and I hope that you'll support that effort. And at least give me the benefit of the doubt.
So, Bill, do you think that he's right, that these kinds of questions can't be raised on a political campaign? He begins by providing specific policy prescriptions and saying exactly what's on his mind. But that only gets him support from his base. Is a campaign really about speaking mostly to the middle of the road voters then?
Well, it's a numbers game, and you have to recognize that if you really want to get elected. And I think there's a way to appeal to broader swaths of the voting population without being insincere or untrue to yourself. It's just a matter of how you go about doing that. There's not a lot of swing voters or independent voters that are waiting for your 12-point program on every single issue.
So what are they waiting for? His advisors keep on telling him to go out there and shake hands.
It's an emotional decision, and I think that's something that the movie recognizes a little bit. Voting's an emotional decision. It's not really a logical decision.
Yeah.
So
Drew Weston has been writing about so eloquently, and I think that's exactly right. You'd love to think it's about all your 6 and 12-point programs, wouldn't you? But it is about the emotional connection that voters can feel with a candidate, which is why so much of any campaign expenditure goes towards television advertising.
And is that why Bullworth, as funny as it was, Warren Beatty's Bullworth, where the candidate says exactly what's on his mind, was so unrealistic?
Yeah. I mean,
well, that movie was unrealistic for a lot of reasons. But
although I would like to say the candidate was unrealistic. The scene that you excerpted, they're dead silent. Now, understand, he is the last speaker in a long line of speakers at a dinner. Mm-hmm. And Sharon and I both started laughing when we watched it because we have never been at a dinner that was ever that quiet for any speaker.
Because there'll be at least one person who finds it necessary to clap after one of those statements.
Well, and they're yakking the whole time. Oh. I mean, you know, campaigns are a series of small humiliations, and one of them is talking to a room full of people who aren't really listening to you.
The audio in this movie is really, really well done. It was one of the first ones to do that sort of Robert Altman-esque cross-talking thing, and they're utilizing echoes in the room. It's really, really well done from that standpoint.
Well, when he realizes that the campaign is getting away from him, he still decides not to quit the race. How much, Connie, does a campaign take on its own dynamic so the candidate has to cede control to all the advisors and aides?
Well, I'm not sure you're asking the right person because I think I will be that pain in my husband's side for the rest of his career because I'm always pushing back on that. But this movie really characterized well what happens in campaigns. They are almost beings unto themselves. And it takes so much effort, constant effort, to push back and to keep the machine from grinding. I mean, look what happened not so long ago, for example, with Michelle Obama in, I think it was Detroit, where two volunteers told two Muslim women they couldn't sit behind the lectern. Mm-hmm. And whose idea could that possibly have been? But people start thinking they're little masters of the universe in campaigns, and they start making decisions that have nothing to do with the candidate. But, of course, the candidate is responsible for all of them and has to answer for them.
Bill, ultimately, in the end, is the campaign just about getting elected? Because McKay says at the end, what do we do now?
And
you wonder whether he would have won if he wasn't so good looking.
This is what every candidate who's close has to deal with, and it's why I've never run for office, and I would never even consider running for office.
You don't look like Robert Redford?
Well, that's one big problem. But the notion of, if you're really close to winning and you've been through all this and somebody comes up and says and makes the argument to you that if you don't get elected, you can't do any of these good things that got you into this in the first place. Now, what do you do in that situation if they say the only way that you can possibly win is to do these things at this point, and then you'll be able to do a greater amount of good for more people? What do you do?
Yeah, right. But, you know, as I said to my husband, what that sounds like to me, and every candidate hears it at some point, it sounds like, go ahead and sell your soul. We'll go back and get it later at the pawn shop.
Well, the third film is about a candidate who does not sell his soul, Bob Roberts, which was released in 1994, Tim Robbins wrote, directed, and starred. It's almost like the flip side of the candidate, isn't it?
Well, this is somebody who probably sold his soul coming out of the womb. I don't know that I'd characterize quite that way.
I love his line, the song, you know, because he's a singer, don't forget. He plays the guitar where he goes, the times they are a-changing, back.
Well, he's not the first politician to sing songs. Louisiana Governor Jimmy Davis wrote You Are My Sunshine as a campaign song, and that helped his political career for years.
Yeah, go figure.
We have a clip from the movie where the incumbent, Senator Brickley Paste, who's played by Gore Vidal, everything comes back to the beginning, is trying to articulate who Bob Roberts actually is.
I get vibrations from Mr. Bob Roberts of a very disturbing sort. I haven't any idea who he is. I haven't any idea what he's like. I don't think I'm supposed to have any idea. I know that he proved to be a master of pushing racist buttons and sexist buttons, this and that, the politics of emotion. He's very good at that. What's behind it? I don't see anybody at home. But I will say that once or twice in the course of our debate, I detected a slight whiff of sulfur in the air.
Whoa. Now, Bill, weren't similar things said about one candidate that you consulted for, Jesse Ventura?
Not really to that degree, because people didn't know how to deal with Jesse Ventura. So in some regards, it's like the Bob Roberts movie in that people can't really figure out how to deal with this guy. But remember, in Ventura's race, it wasn't A or B. It was A, B, or C. And because it was a three-way race, people were a little bit concerned about offending Ventura's voters in some way. So he didn't necessarily get attacked that much because people didn't really know what would happen if they did attack him.
Connie, I got the feeling that this movie was mostly critical of the media.
Yeah. How he gets sucked into it all.
Well, the broadcast anchors support Roberts. Do you think the media are really implicated in too many elections?
Well, this would certainly be the year to be asking that more than any other year. I mean, there, as journalists, as a member of the much reviled mainstream media, I'm seeing so much happening in cable and on blogs and in talk radio. And I think, for example, what happened during the Hillary Clinton race, where some of it simply was absolutely over the line, in terms of, you know, comparing her to every ex-wife you've ever seen outside probate court. That was, you know, and it can make you laugh, except if you aggregate it all, as it was in a particular video, it really starts to hit home for a lot of us women. And I do wonder where we're going to land on all this. I really do wonder right now. And I'd be curious what Bill's perspective is on it, because you've had to deal on the other side with the media.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I thought they were about to take Barack Obama to the Vatican and have him canonized at a certain point. But it did remind me a lot of another candidate in a different time, and that was John McCain in 2000, because we were looking at McCain's race as possibly a potential independent race in 2000. So we followed him around a little while, and I would talk to people who were supporting McCain, and I was dumbfounded by people who were saying how much they loved him, and I'd asked them about some of his positions on issues, and it didn't really matter because he was a different kind of guy. And that goes back to what we were talking about before, that it's not really a logical decision. It's an emotional decision.
We have to leave it there, unfortunately. I want to thank you both so much, Bill Hilsman, who's been a political consultant for some prominent upset and challenger races for Democrats and independents, and Connie Schultz, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. It's been a lot of fun talking about these movies.
Thank you, Leonard. This was a hoot.
Yeah, this was great fun.
On tomorrow's show, former Obama advisor Samantha Power explains what the Democrats need to do persuade voters they'd be better than Republicans at keeping America safe. Then a look at cutting-edge draperies that produce half the electricity of the average home, plus TJ English on a time when the mob owned Cuba and lost it to the revolution. And also, we will see how fear shapes our lives. The Leonard Lopez Show is produced by Blake Neeshick, Sarah English, and Scott Goldberg. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Paula Crossfield, Lauren Bonner, and Lawrence Holland. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopez, your host. We'll see you tomorrow.